And that'll be the end of our discussion about sin, which has taken quite a long time.
20 lectures.
20 lectures, better than that. So tomorrow, for Purim, I want to have some fun. So therefore, what we're going to do till Purim is we're going to go through the Megillah, but we every time it says in the Megillah, the word HaMelech, the king, without saying HaMelech HaHashverosh, it's in there 104, 100 some odd times it says it, it refers not just to HaHashverosh, but also to God, right? HaMelech Sam is HaMelech Malchi HaMelech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're going to go, I suggest you start doing this for homework if you want, start looking at all the HaMelech, anytime it says the king, and the Megillah, and figure out how it refers not just to HaHashverosh, but also to God. Now, I actually have a sefer at home which does this, but I'll try and do it without referring to the sefer, to try and figure out what each one is. So I think that's what I'm going to do from tomorrow till for the next week. But anytime, we still have this sin stuff going on here, and we're preparing God for the cross, and yet in the last few days we talked about Cain's sin, and the fact that Cain was warned by God to watch out, and according to the Malbim, Cain misunderstood the warning because he thought the warning was watch out from Hegel, whereas the warning was watch out from sin. But if you don't learn like the Malbim, if you do learn the Malbim, don't learn like the Malbim, the bottom line is Hashem warned Hegel, whether he understood or not, that sin is something which is crouching and waits. And we said that it's something emotional, animalistic, which caused the person to go astray. And after the sin of Adam, it's internalized, not externalized anymore. It's not the nefesh, it's the internal thing called the chakras. And we said that, of course, a person is supposed to follow his intellect rather than his emotion and do the right thing, in teitiv, right, to do the right thing. And that way, ideally speaking, he'll be able to deflect the emotional power of the yetzer hara. Not so simple. As we mentioned, it's not so easy because most of us are not, at least in this generation, don't have very strong intellects which are able to master our moves. And while society actually tries to get us to ignore our intellects, and I'm just saying, I don't mean society, but rather the culture, gets us to try and ignore our intellect and focus on that which makes us feel good, gratified, good, high, whatever the case may be. So therefore, what Hashem is saying, you know, you have to be careful about things like that, Cain. And Cain doesn't listen. Either misunderstands or he doesn't listen. And he goes, and Pasuk says he gets up and he kills Hegel. At this direction, Chazal say this was the first time that anybody killed anybody else. So therefore, actually, Cain didn't know how to kill Hegel. Never done before. There was no precedent. So therefore, the Rashi is now a couple of seconds later. He kept on beating him. Over and over and over again, all over, until he finally died. Because he didn't know, he was going to, you know, skewer him on a sword, or, you know, hit him over the head. So therefore he had to keep on beating him back and forth until finally he saw that this was the way to kill Hegel. So it's a particularly brutal thing which Hegel did. It wasn't just that, you know, he killed him, he'll shoot him. Not so brutal, he'll shoot him. But here was really a very torturous and brutal thing, obviously a very powerful emotional experience for Cain, which in that he killed Hegel. So Hashem now comes to him, and Hashem says to Cain, Ein Hegel Achicha, where is Hegel your brother? The way the Malbim points out, he says, listen, Cain, he was your brother. Not just Hegel, he was your brother. You were somebody, you were tight with him, right? You had a relationship. How could you get up and kill him? Whether you understood what I said or not, but it's your brother. How can you possibly kill your brother? Vayomer. And Cain says, Vayogati. I didn't know. That's a strange language. Now he picks up and then he says, what do you mean Vayogati? Vayogati is past tense. I didn't know. What should he respond in present tense? I don't know. So I think, I didn't know. What's he saying? No, he's not admitting to killing him yet. He's still trying to cover up. What?
I didn't know.
Yeah. But I don't say don't know because I didn't know. How do you also try and put it?
I do not know.
Yeah. Now I got it wrong. The Vayogati, you know, it's wrong. It's not, I don't know, it's I didn't know. So the Malbim says, I didn't know that you, when you were warning me, you were warning me about sin. I said, I warned me about heaven. That's why I wanted to kill them. But he said to me, be careful, and Blessed Zion. The Blessed Zion said, be careful. There's somebody crouching and waiting for you. I thought you were talking about heaven. That's why I killed him. I didn't know he was my brother. I thought it was my enemy. That's how the Malbim explains the Pasuk. But I think that perhaps we can say a little bit differently. That when he says, it means that he didn't know what he was doing. It kind of says, I didn't know. It truly says, I didn't know that Hevel was my brother. But not that I made a mistake in understanding you. But rather, I didn't know that I had responsibility for him. Meaning, my assumption was that, everybody goes, looks out for number one. Why should I have responsibility for him? It's not my problem what happens to him. Whatever happens to him, if I happen to kill him, I happen to kill him. So what's the difference? As far as I'm concerned, can we start to go hunky-dory? So Hashem is telling us a major punishment for second. You are responsible for your brother. I don't understand. So his brother thought, I didn't know that he was my brother, I had to be concerned about it at all. The truth is, and you can take it even further, you can say, it's the first time it's mentioned in the Torah that it's very conflict of brothers. Right? Other had no brothers. Have I had no brothers? The first time brotherhood is mentioned. Well, literally brotherhood. So he's saying, I should have said to Kain, he was your brother. Kain says, I don't know, what does brother mean? How am I supposed to know? I know that he was a brother. I didn't know there was any relationship. I know there was anything significant. It seems that Kain is saying that I didn't know, and maybe he's being disingenuous. Maybe he really knew. That's quite possible. But if he's coming to claim to God, at least the half-truth, and he says, all these things which you're telling me, that he's my brother, and I was responsible for him, well, these are tremendous chidushim to me. These are very novel ideas. How am I supposed to know that? Yeah.
All the passages you see that Herod is referred to as saying brother, everywhere, I was going to ask.
Yeah, but Hashem, there was never any direct conversation between them.
Oh,
right?
I see that, but it's not describing...
You're right, describe as his brother. I agree. He tells his side of him as his brother, but this is where Hashem tells him. This is the relationship between the two of you. So the Torah is writing from the perspective of, hundreds, thousands of years later, when Zohar was given, saying he was a brother. But it could be that at that time, Cain was told, he's your brother, responsible for him, and Cain refuses to believe that. He says, am I supposed to watch out for my brother? It's an amazing question, right? Again, maybe Cain is trying to pull the wool over God's eyes. But the question, as he's phrasing it, is, who says I have to watch out for the other guy? I come first. I was angry at him. I can, therefore, displace my anger against him. Yeah?
I feel like we're doing too little respect to Cain's knowledge of what God's power is. I feel like Cain is... The Bible is giving an impression that Cain was stupid and didn't understand what God knew and what was going on in the world.
No, wait a second. The Malbim does give the impression, it's a fair complaint against the Malbim, the Malbim doesn't give the impression that Cain was stupid. But he said Cain didn't understand what God was saying to him, he still doesn't understand what God was saying to him at this point. Yes, that's true. But let's take it without the Malbim for a moment. Let's say Cain wasn't so stupid. But he's a liar. Isn't he? So he says, I didn't know. Maybe he meant I didn't know the past. Maybe he says I don't know the present. But he's certainly lying. So therefore, he's certainly doing something despicable. Right? I don't know if we have to defend Cain on this level here.
Yeah, he's not lying.
What? According to Moses, according to Moses is stupid.
He's just
stupid. Okay. Again, just to clarify that for those of you who weren't here in the past, the Moses says that Cain misunderstood God. When God said, be careful, so Cain misunderstood and thought, be careful, according to Moses, be careful against heaven, that's why I killed him. He says, I know this, my brother. I thought you wanted me that I should be careful, and then I killed him. The conventional understanding, though, not like the Malbim, is that Cain knew very well that he shouldn't kill, that killing was not a good thing to do, right? And he says to God, listen, I didn't know that there's anything wrong with killing, he's lying, because killing, in fact, is something which I can do, and why not? Am I responsible for him? I didn't say that that's the conventional way of understanding, I'm sorry, that was a mistake. The conventional understanding is that he's not even admitting that he killed him. Eventually, if I'm saying that he's trying to get out of it, say, well, I don't know where he is. But hold on, he went on vacation. But what I'm trying to say as a different way, a third way, is to say, you know, Cain is admitting that he killed him. But he's saying, so what? Was I responsible for him? I was responsible for myself. And this myself was what I had to do. It was my responsibility. So therefore, he doesn't take responsibility for having killed Hevel. Okay, so those are three possible ways of understanding. I'm not making you happy. Have I heard anyone today?
Eric.
I'm not making you happy. Right? Sorry.
You want to know?
What? No, he's upset at me.
What?
He's upset at me, no?
I'm upset at everything that, with all the things. I don't feel that.
You want to give it a shot?
I'm asking you.
Okay, it's a free country. You can come up with an idea. We'll, and what? Okay, that's good. Yes.
And so anniversary, when he refers to brother anniversary, he needs to highlight a monstrosity of Cain killing his brother, or either the fact that he killed him without knowing what he was really doing. And that is when the life of the man is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, now, well, yeah, I mean, the cost of killing another human being is, then when he was punching, he was trying to revive him, or, I don't know, because when someone says,
but when I tell you, the mom says at the end of the puzzle, I don't know if that makes everybody happier, but the mom says at the end of the puzzle, Ashomer Achi Anochi, am I my brother's watchman or keeper? Kind of, what the mom intends, another corollary of the Malvin's approach, is that Kind thought that the man does not have free will, meaning that whatever I do, it's because, you know, not the devil made me do it, but that's the way my responses are based on my emotions. What does it mean not to have free will? Not that free will means not that I don't make decisions, but rather my decisions are not made by my intellect, but rather they're made by my emotions. A dog can make a decision, right? A dog can decide whether to pursue the bone or not to pursue the bone. But is there his decision that he can't? He can decide not to pursue the bone if he sees that in order to get to the bone, he has to jump through fire, right? How does he make that decision? Instinctively drawn to the bone, but no, because he has also the instinct to live, right, to survive. So somewhere in his mind, I don't know if you want to call it decision, call whatever you want, but somewhere in his mind, or wherever else this goes on, he's making, so to speak, a decision, you know, it's not worth pursuing the bone because I might get killed in the process, right? The same thing a dog, on some level, makes a decision, you know, to respond to its master, right? It decides, you know, it's worthwhile for me to respond to my master in this case because whatever, I'm going to get rewarded or somebody protects me, but there's certain decisions which the dog makes about who he's going to bite and who he's not going to bite. So there are all sorts of things that are drawn on a rudimentary level where there are conflicting emotions and you decide to follow one emotion over the other. That's not free will. That's not called free will. Free will is exercising the human will, which means the intellect, in shaping my course of affairs and my destiny. So that's not, when we speak about free will, it's not the free will of choosing between emotions, but rather the free will not to follow one's emotions. So therefore, Cain said to Hashem, according to the Malvin, Cain thought that man is compelled to do what he does, and he has no free will, and there he said, am I my brother's keeper? According to the Malvin, he wants to say, you are the one who protects people from injuries, right? It's Hashem's job to protect people. It's not my job to protect people. And you are the one who protects people from other people's bad will, from other people's negative emotions, right? So therefore, why didn't you watch Hevel? It's your fault that I killed Hevel, right? So what if I beat him? It's you're the one who should have, in other words, I'm not the showman, you're the showman. Why didn't you watch? I have to beat him up, because I was angry at him. So therefore, as a Tarzanian man, I had to beat him up. It was your job, if you want to keep him alive, to protect him. And since you didn't protect him, so therefore, why are you coming to blame me It was your problem that you actually made me do it. Not that you made me do it, but they did protect him when I came to kill him. It's a fascinating shot, a fascinating approach, right? And everybody says, the way Malcolm concludes on his poster, he says, so since you decreed that he should die, I was compelled to kill him, right? Meaning, had you not decreed that he would die, so he would have survived. But since you decreed that he died, that's why he didn't survive. And he wants to say, he brings down a message. Medrash says, I didn't kill him. The Yetzer Hara, which you put within me, killed him. Which is the same idea. In other words, my emotions told me to kill him. And the reason why he died is because you decreed upon him death. It's not my problem. So Hashem says to him, in the next verse, Hashem says in the next verse, God said to him, what did you do? A very fascinating process. He said, the voice of the blood of your brother,
voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the mouth.
But Tzorachim means like in plural. It means there are many, many droplets of blood, right? And they're all emitting a voice. That's what it sounds like. It's not the cold so ache, right? Which means a voice shouting. But it says the voice of the blood shouting in plural. So that means each droplet of blood is shouting out from the ground, where the ground has obviously kind buried heaven. So Ray the Malkin explains it.
Do you want to say it? I thought about to say something.
What?
No.
No? Okay. So the way Mom explains it, Hashem told him, listen, first of all, you have free will. And therefore, it's not my fault that he died. It's your fault that he died. Secondly, there's a difference in punishment between somebody who sins against a religious or societal law, societal law on the one hand, and somebody who sins against natural law on the other hand. Now, he says, society makes all sorts of laws. They make laws, and maybe they make sense, maybe they don't make sense, right? They make laws now about your cell phones when you're driving, things like that. Okay, those might be good laws, but they're not necessarily intuitive laws, right? Maybe you make them, maybe not. Besides that, of course, there's religious laws. That's a religious law, right? But then there are things which are basic natural laws, says the Malbim. The Malbim says natural law are those things that actually we can derive logically from the human condition. Which, if you recall your American history, was the basis of Thomas, what?
Humanism?
Yeah, it was the basis of Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. Because there was, by law, they had no right to rebel against the British, right? The British were the sovereigns. How could they rebel against the sovereign country? So they have to come up with this idea of natural law of we hold these truths, how does it go?
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
So the self-evident, that is natural law. It's a big issue whether natural law is legitimate, not legitimate, but Jefferson obviously was legitimate. Whoever else wrote the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and Adams, Franklin, whoever it was. So they actually based that on natural law, and they said natural law is more of a basis for the right governing of a land than the law of the society or country which imposes its will on the land. But he says, somebody who sins against divine law, against religious law. And while he says, his punishment is not natural. It's something which has to be brought about through Hashem's hashgacha or control. Meaning, there is in fact a Gemara which asks, how come when you pick a fish, it's not a Gemara, it's a Tamei Torah, the Moshe Kodavero in the 16th century. He says, why, really, when you pick a fig off a tree on Shabbos, what should happen? Immediately, your hand should shrivel up, wither, and fall off. Right? Because there should be the natural cause and effect. You will now pluck the fruit from the tree on Shabbos. Your hand should fall off. So the Moshe Kodavero says, that's what should happen. It should happen that way. Why doesn't it? Because Hashem is patient. He's tolerant. Erech HaChaim. There's a long, he's patient, and he waits to see, maybe he's a tshuva, he waits to see, you know, maybe you'll stop doing this type of thing, so he doesn't immediately smite you down on the spot. The Malbim is saying differently. The Malbim is saying, no, it's not, it's, there's no premise that it should be inherent in creation that when you put your hand up and pluck a faith off the Shri HaShavit, that it should shrivel up, wither, and fall off. Because divine law is not punished by the nature of the world. Divine law is punished by the divine. When God decides he's going to zap you, then he's going to zap you. Right? But it's not a cause and effect. It's not the same thing as, you know, you jump off a building, you die. Right? It's when God decides to kill you, he will kill you. Yeah.
No, you don't have to know that.
No. Okay, fine. So that was easy. So
wait, but then doesn't that go against the idea that God controls the physical world, certain things happen? Like, he's saying that if you pluck the tree, that you have to wait till the afterlife to get punished for it, and there's not...
No, God can decide 5 years from now to punish you, too.
No, but he's saying that this natural world does not respond to punish you. But doesn't God use his natural world to respond to punish you later?
Yes, but it has to be a conscious decision on God's part, whoever's in charge.
Oh, you mean the system he set up doesn't automatically...
Right, exactly. It doesn't automatically administer physical punishment for sins which commit against religious law. The same thing with societal law, of course. You know, if I talk on my cell phone when I'm driving, which I did a few minutes ago while I was coming here, then nobody catches me, so then, you know, I'm not going to get punished. Right? It's not a good thing to do, but unless I get caught, same thing with speeding. Right? If I speed, I don't get caught. So there's no natural thing that if you speed, your car disintegrates. It doesn't happen that way, right? Maybe someday they'll do something in that respect, but not yet. So he says, but what the Bible wants to claim, can't claim, is that a person who sins against natural law, nature itself, punishes him. Meaning, if you decide to get so angry that you kick a rock, so the rock will break your toe. Right? Just the way it happens. That's a quid pro quo. You want to go and oppose nature, then nature is going to take retribution on you. So he wants to say an interesting thing about murder, right? He says that we have a pasuk in Devarim, much later, where it says, where it talks about murder, it says, but it says that, you know, if somebody murders, you got to kill him. And you shouldn't have mercy on him, right? Normally you're supposed to have mercy on a person, but and any other sin, you don't have to strive to kill a person, except for somebody who strives to get you to worship Avodah Zarah. But the death penalty for somebody who murders is very important, because of v'yarta lo b'mikra becha. You have to eradicate evil from your midst. And therefore, there's a halacha. Let's say you don't have two witnesses. You don't have two witnesses who saw him, who warned him ahead of time. But the king, from a special halacha called Din HaMelech, is allowed to have this person killed. With, you know, circumstantial evidence, one witness, it doesn't have to have the full says warning, two witnesses, etc. Why is that? Again, because murder is ra. It's not just a religious sin. It's a sin against natural law. And you have to eradicate it from your midst. Moreover, says the Malbim. What does it say there? It says, the land will not be atoned for unless you spill the blood of the person who spilled blood. Now this is a fascinating idea. The idea is there's a natural response to murder. The land responds to murder by not producing. Why is that? I don't know. I made it that way. But the way the land responds, maybe it's because when the earth was cursed, so maybe this is something which embedded in it. I don't know exactly. But he says, this is a natural response to murder. And that's why to atone, to make the land work, you got to kill this other guy. And if you don't find the other guy, you don't know who he is, so what's that luck, or what do you do? So the whole procedure, whole ceremony. And then Dvarim says that you have the ceremony of Egla Rufa. So you take a calf, and you bring it down to a valley, which was never killed, never cultivated, and you kill the calf by wringing its neck from the back of the neck, and you say, the elders say, Kapel Am Chayisol, forgive your nation Israel. Very strange ceremony, right? So without trying to explain what exactly it's doing, you see, there's something about atoning, if you can't find the murderer, you got to do something in lieu of that. And have something to do with the land. Otherwise, who cares where you do it? So if you have to go down to a valley which is never cultivated, go do it in your backyard. But there must be something there which has to do with the cultivation of the land. So therefore, he says over here, he says, since your brother's blood is shouting to me, and asking for justice, right? And they're not asking for a spiritual punishment for you, but rather they're shouting to have a natural punishment. And that's what happens here. He says, what happens is, the fascinating thing, the next passage says, Vata arura ta min hazama. You are cursed from the land. I'm not doing this. You think, I'm punishing you? I'm punishing you. Arura ta min hazama. The land itself is punishing you. Because there's this natural law. You murder, the land doesn't work for you. Why is that? I'm not sure, but obviously God created the world that way. We can hypothesize. Maybe the mob and dust. And he doesn't seem to hypothesize here. But he says, the land itself, the land itself will curse you. That's the natural response. Asher pundasot pia,
what does that mean? How does it translate that?
Which opened wide its mouth. To lakach me'achicha mi'adecha. But in order to take your brother's blood from you, right? In other words, the blood, the earth opened its mouth, took the blood, and now it's reciprocating, responding, and cursing you as a result. And therefore, again, Pasuk Beis follows. Kisagon es hadama, when you work the land, lo sosei teis kocha lo. It will no longer give its fruit out of you. It's the natural result of you having been a murderer. No benot yeborot. You're just going to be a wanderer over the face of the earth.
One question, isn't the natural world sort of do the opposite though? Because if you kill somebody and you leave it on the ground, doesn't it act as fertilizer and make things grow better?
I don't think that's true. It might make things grow better, but it doesn't make you, that's not cultivation. So if you don't,
you don't eat anything from it.
Right, it's not the assumption is that cultivation doesn't work. Look, the Rav, it's amazing, Chiddush. It's a novel idea, it's a novel thing, obviously. But I'm saying that once murder occurs, the land responds in kind and doesn't no longer gives you a good yield of crops when you cultivate it. So, again, the Rambam says because that there's a natural law, not the murder, and nature responds to the murderer. Yeah.
I'm not sure on this one, but I just want to be sure that, yeah. So, man was taken from the earth, so in such a way we stole something from the earth. Therefore, when we return there, why should the earth be angry? You're returning.
You have to be returned the right way. On the contrary.
Yeah, why?
You're explaining. You're explaining.
I'm
not asking. But it's like the earth gave man a deposit. In other words, he said, listen, the earth says to man, or Hashem, I guess is more correct. Hashem, the earth says to Hashem, okay, you want to take earth from me and make man? Fine, go ahead. You're God, you can do what you want. But I want him back. To get him back in a natural way. Right? Not that it should be unnatural. Because then when he comes back in an unnatural way, so then that's a sudden equilibrium of the earth. Something like that. That's sort of,
I was wondering about
that. Yeah, it could be. It sounds good. So that might be the shot. There's one other thing I want to say about this pasuk, which is when it says, Kol me'achicha tzokim elai min adama, I bet you the article brings this down. It says here, no, he only brings down, the only thing down the thing that he hit him all over. That kind of stabbed him all over. Oh no, he did it. The Rosh on page in Pasuk 10 says, literally blood. The word is in the plural, implying that Cain's crime was not limited to one person. He had shed Abel's blood and the blood of his potential descendants. Alternatively, this teaches us that he bled from many wounds. Not knowing which organs are vital to life, Cain stabbed him all over. It's a very powerful idea that's being brought down here from the Mark, which is, that Hevel, listen, God knew Hevel was going to be killed, right? God knows everything. Let's assume that God knew. Yet, nevertheless, Hashem says, all Hevel's progeny, which is a lot of people, because Hevel is one of the first people, so there are all those millions and billions of people who would have come from Hevel, they're all shouting to me, because you prevented all that from happening. Everything which will happen in the future. Now, it's an amazing statement, which Chazal is making. There's a famous Orach Chaim HaChumash. Orach Chaim is a commentary on the Chumash, which is a very controversial one. It seems to be exactly what this is saying here. The Orach Chaim says, why, I think it shows this one. Stop me if I did. Don't stop me, the other people haven't heard it. The Orach Chaim says, why, when it says Reuben threw Yosef down into the pit. And Chazal say, the rabbis say, that the pit was full of snakes and scorpions. The Orach Chaim says, I don't understand. What did Reuben gain by throwing down into the pit? Right? Here he's facing his brothers. Down there he's facing, which is possible. Down there he's facing the snakes and scorpions, which are much more likely to kill him. So what does Reuben gain by having Yosef thrown down into the pit? That's the Orachaim's question. So the Orachaim gives an amazing answer. He says that a human being has free will to kill another human being, regardless of that, whether that other human being deserves to die at that moment. However, a snake or scorpion can't kill somebody unless it's time to go. So natural phenomena can't kill somebody unless the time is up because they have no free will. But if I want to kill you, right, and that's my decision, even if you're supposed to live for 70, 80, 90 years, I can kill you at the age of 20. Right? I can shoot you when you're dead.
But then indirectly you're killing him?
Mm-hmm.
You throw someone into a pit of scorpions.
No, it's actually saying, no. But the same thing, no. He didn't know the scorpions. The subject is, you're right. He knew the scorpions were there. But the scorpions can't kill him unless, I understand what you're saying. It's interesting.
So if you throw someone to the lions and you can't kill him?
If he dies, it means the time is up. That's what
right,
I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good point. I never thought of that issue before. But quite the high, you'd have to say something to that effect. Interesting.
Don't worry, the dog won't kill you if you're
fighting. No, it could be. That's what you throw somebody to the lions. Somebody throws somebody else to the lions. I don't know if he could have did that in court. Maybe that has something to do with it. It's an interesting question. No, that's the point. If somebody, if you take a gun and shoot somebody, his time might not have been up. Right? Not only that.
Maybe that's
someone's
directing
it. No, but that's the point of this question. Now that was the time that up, he could have been destined to have 10 kids, and those 10 kids are going to have another 10 kids each, and so on and so forth. You are interrupting that whole possibility, that whole chain of creation.
So
you could have happened, you ruined it.
So you can kill an infertile or an old person?
Excuse me?
So if you kill an infertile or an old person...
It's not as bad. You can't kill anybody, right?
Right.
But the repercussions of killing somebody who's...
Yeah,
it's just anyone. What?
It probably just means, as far as getting judged up in heaven, you can't say, God, you had a snake kill a guy, I killed a guy, big deal. It's just trying to warn you how severe, like, if someone doesn't have 10 kids, or this is bad 10 kids. Because, like, what he just said, if you throw somebody into a lion's den, and you know the guy's going to get killed, isn't it obviously that you killed the guy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think that that's necessarily the answer.
The lion is the weapon.
Let me just finish this so what the Orachaim says, then we'll come back to it. The Orachaim says that, so therefore, Reuben said, if I leave him out of the pit, so the brothers can decide to kill him, even though he's supposed to live 110 years, whatever he ultimately lives, they can kill him now at the age of 70. But if I throw him down into the pit, with the snakes and scorpions, they won't be able to kill him unless his time is up, right? And so therefore he threw him down. And I want to say something else in this respect, which is that they say, Rashi brings down also the commission, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes out for the first time, you know, he kills an Egyptian, the first thing Moshe does is goes out and kills an Egyptian. So Rashi says that before he killed him, like Vayichen Kovachol, he says he looked in both directions. So Rashi brings down a man Medrash, and he says, what did Vayichen Kovachol look in both directions mean? He said he looked through all his generations, all his progeny, all his descendants, and saw, what? You remember it?
Yes, because
anyone convert. He looked to see if anyone would convert to Judaism. And he saw this amazing Rashi. And he said, and he saw throughout, you know, till 2000, whatever, none of these guys, none of the descendants of this Egyptian would ever convert to Judaism, so therefore, he killed him. Right? Had there been one saving grace in him, he wouldn't have killed him. But this way, he had him killed. So here, you see, it goes even further. It means that what Rashi's saying there is that, in fact, before you kill somebody, you really have to check, because he could have all these further generations, right? So therefore, you are cutting that off when you kill that individual. If you cut it off when you kill that individual, you're responsible in some way, shape, or form for all those things which didn't happen as a result. So the moral of that story is that you're responsible for all the repercussions of everything you do, not as responsible for the exact deed that you did, but responsible for all the repercussions of the deeds that you did as they reverberate throughout the generations. So let's say, let's say I came to this class and told you something which made you so disgusted with Torah that you walked out. So Kofi Yamaka walked out. So now, I don't do the Rahman response. So I would now be responsible, not just for you, but for all your kids who then wouldn't be from, and all your kids' kids, and all the kids you were convinced not to be from. It would be a pretty, pretty, you know, bad thing. So that not doesn't just stop when you walk out, so none of you do it, please. So if you don't, so doesn't it stop when you walk out the door, but it continues on and on. Yes.
I was just thinking about the whole animal thing. It could be that, for instance, like in last week's parsha, where we're talking about, you know, if you have an ox who kills someone, it's not as bad. It's only worse if, like, if he's a known killing ox, mm-hmm. right? So I would think, like, if you threw someone into a lion pit, you know that lions like to eat people. So you'd be, it'd be like you killing him. Whereas throwing someone into a pit with scorpions and snakes, you know, there's a good possibility that you could survive. You could go to one side of the pit and kick dirt at the scorpions and snakes and make a perimeter. You know, you could do something where there is a possibility of survival.
Saying good. I want to take it.
But they could overrun them.
I think it's say better. You're saying good, but I think it's say better. Which I wouldn't have thought of if you not said it. Which is, the difference is between animals which eat and animals attack, faint, right. In other words, if you throw something to the lions and the lions are hungry, then you're really killing them, right? But sometimes snakes don't eat human beings, right? They don't eat them, they just attack them, right? So that, you're saying that attack by the snake doesn't happen unless actually, you know, he's worthy of dying. In fact, it more interesting enough speaks about, let's say I take a snake. I put the snake on you. So, yeah, I stick them on you with the snake. So what's that look in that case? So it depends. It depends how the venom works. If you say the venom is there already, and the snake stings, I don't know how it works. If you say the venom is the snake stings, then you kill him. You're liable to death because you killed him. You put the venom into his system. And but if the snake generates the venom on its own, right, and somewhere deep in the recesses of its whatever glands are producing it, and that it's not yet there, so in fact, the snake kills him, and you're off the hook.
I have to disagree with that, though, because if we're saying that animals don't have free will intellectually, they only have free will to do what is natural to them. So they're controlled by God, but they're controlled in a way, whereas we know if you go to a snake and you kick it, it will try to bite you. So if you throw someone into, like, for, like, wasps, who are inherently aggressive stingers, if you throw someone into a wasp nest, you know, certainly they're going to get stung all over.
That's true. No, I agree with what you said before. It's true. You have to qualify that it didn't spawn directly on top of a rattlesnake.
Right.
That would be about killing it. Okay.
Right.
That's true.
You have a reasonable chance.
That's a reasonable chance, and that it's not an animal which gets hungry, but rather an animal to attack. So I think that's how we could define it, and that would work. So in any case, so Hashem says, just to finish up, so Hashem says to listen, God, this is not a good thing, right? He says, hey, Vayomer Kain el Hashem, but all gleaming is so. Kain says, "Apostle Gimel, listen, God, is my sin so great that it can't be borne? In other words, you can't bear my sin. Look what you did to me today. Hey, Garashto Tiryomer al Pnei Adama, you threw me out of the land. Because that's God's curse. God's curse was that Kain can't stay in one place." The Adamah curse was that nothing will grow. That came from the Adamah. But Hashem also cursed that he's got to move. And there's a fundamental idea of subsist. Anybody who finds himself moving a lot in life, let's say, you know, like me, I will move a lot during my life. I might not have any of this experience. But the thought says, you know why that is. People who are angry have to move. Because we see in the Torah that when somebody murders somebody else, he's sent away. Either he's sent away here, you know, by God, for kind, or, as we know, if somebody murders somebody else inadvertently, so we still think he's a violent fellow, and he has to go to an Iyamikvah, he has to go to the city of refuge. He's got to move. Why is that? Because the rectification for anger is to go somewhere else. If you stay in one spot too long, or you stay where you are, so then you're going to get angry again. So therefore, we have to send you away. You have to go somewhere else. So, and if you keep on getting angry over and over again, you've got to move again and again and again. So therefore, Hashem says, you know what? Kain, you have a violent nature. If you have a violent nature, you have to be on the move. We can't leave you in one spot spending length of time, right? So therefore, Kain is very upset about this, right? Kain says, you know, it's too much, right? This curse is too much for me to bear, right? So Kain, he says to Hashem, you know, if I was wandering around with you will be okay. But it says, look at what it says. It says, Hank Yerasha Siyah Yom Yafnei Zama, Umi Panecho Esaser. It's an amazing statement he makes. He says, I'm going to be hidden from your face. Wasn't he going to hit their face? God sees everything. It means that God is no longer going to have a relationship with Kain. So Hashem says, Kain says, very bad. How am I going to wander around? And then you're not going to protect me. And I'm going to be wandering around without any protection, without any relationship with you. Or you'll come and see Argani. Anybody finds you, you're going to kill me. Amazing statement. Who's going to kill him? Who's going to kill him? Who's anybody who finds him?
Monkeys.
Right? Monkeys, right? It's not human beings. But I'm not going to be human beings yet, right? Who's going to kill him? You'll come and see Argani.
Couldn't that be the descendant of,
Animals. So what I'm trying to say, and it seems like this is correct, what I'm trying to say, is say, we're not for what God's about to do. So animals would kill murderers.
Yeah.
It's whoever. Whoever does not
respond. Who's the whoever,
though? There's no one else in the world besides the wife. Kind of scary. Yeah, what about the wife?
Then I already have children. Yeah, his wife is not
children? Abel's
wife, Cain and Abel's. Abel's had no kids.
Abel's had no kids.
So everybody's descended now from Cain. There was somebody else.
Right, but now Cain's got three wives.
Okay, but the point is that everybody was going to be his kids. Who's going to kill him?
Three wives? Oh, because you have
20. So the question shot is that the animals would kill Cain if not for the fact that God makes Cain a mark in the next puzzle. Because that's part of natural law responding to murder. Natural law is that if you're a murderer, animals will murder you as well. The way the mommy explains it is somewhat different. The mommy wants to explain it that I wish I were dying. If I'm banished from your presence, I wish I were dead. I don't think that's the pshat in the pasuk. The pshat is that nature responds, just like the land responds, nature responds. So therefore Hashem said, you know what, you're right. But you're in the law, Hashem said, L'chein, therefore, Kolorei Kain, Shuvachain, become anybody kills Kain, will be, revenge sevenfold, and whatever that means, we'll read it for now, because I don't want to finish. V'yotzen Hashem l'Kain, Olus v'dufi ha'kos v'sof ha'mozo. For Hashem made him a mark. Now, whatever the mark is, Rashi says he engraved his name in his forehead, and the letter of his name, of Hashem's name. But I think it's more of a mystical thing. It was that Hashem made it that even though animals recognize who's a murderer and who's not, animals are much more sensitive to what's holy and what's profane. Mm. That's why Bilam's donkey could see the angel before Bilam could. That's why it says dogs bark in a town when the Malach HaMoved comes. Why? Because animals, they don't have free will, so they can see and sense many things that we can't sense. So therefore Hashem had to give the after the sin, Hashem gave Cain a special boon, a special gift, which is, really, you should be subject to potential death everywhere you go. Nature should respond by killing you. But, you're right. Well, I'll change that nature. I don't want punishment to be too great. So therefore, like kind of meet us at Rachman. And this is where Chazal say, Cain did tshuva. But Cain said, I don't want me ponecho to say I'm very depressed and I'm going to be taken away from you. It wasn't full tshuva, otherwise the whole thing would have been completely undermined. His punishment would have been completely rescinded. But it was something really true. And Hashem said, you know what, right. And therefore, even though your murderer is going to make for you a sign. And human beings, even if they're reshoim, animals won't automatically attack them. That's what Hashem did for. So ultimately, Cain is protected that way. Yeah.
Maybe if it was a shepherd, he had other animals following
him. Not just sheep.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be upset at Cain. That's not a bad idea. I like that. Yeah, could be. Okay, that would be part of that idea. So anyway, so Cain, I hate to Cain, and the leaf may Hashem. Cain goes out from before God. Nevertheless, he's, you know, his connection to God is no longer the same connection. My Asher bears no key. My painting went to the land of no. And then it goes on to say how Cain had his progeny. So we'll stop with this topic here. We'll go on tomorrow from the beginning. But next is the idea we see is the idea of the sin and the sin.